May it please the court. My name is Larry Wechter, and I'm here with my co-counsel, Carl Safanda, representing the bankruptcy trustee. We would like to thank your honors for inviting us here almost exactly on the 199th anniversary of the great man's birth. Excuse me. I'd like to, if I may, give you what I think is a succinct summary of the parties' conflicting positions in this matter. From our perspective, we offer the court what we view as a narrow, conservative interpretation of the governing statute with ease of application nationwide in all bankruptcy courts. Much discussion has been devoted in this case to the phrase applicable non-bankruptcy law, that is the language contained in subsection B of section 522. Our position simply is that those three words are a reference to the longer phraseology in subsection A, but contain basically the same meaning.
Other than the Giffoon case, though, there are no other cases that support your argument in terms of using that 522B2A language, extending that meaning.
Well, I think that the Kohler or Kaler case, however it's pronounced, which coincidentally was a Florida decision, I think has the most expansive discussion of why it is that subsection B is in this statute at all. And they talk about how in the pre-code situation there were difficulties with the administration of tenancies by the entirety, for example. And so this portion of the statute was included for the purpose of indicating that these types of interests in property, in fact, are included in the administration of a bankruptcy estate rather than being outside of it, and also helps to avoid problems with how the trustee administers those sorts of interests in property. And so I think that that is the most expansive discussion of why this subsection is in the statute to begin with, and I think it fully supports our argument.
Well, under your interpretation of 522B2B, the law governing the Florida property would change any time Ms. Holland changes domicile. Is that right?
Well, I think the key here, Your Honor, is this. We're not talking about a diversity case. We're not talking about the administration of the estate of a deceased somewhere. We're not talking purely about some state law concept. Bankruptcy is different. In a bankruptcy court, you have a bankruptcy estate administered by a trustee who gathers all the assets together and all the claims of the creditors and determines how this matter is going to proceed and what's going to be recognized as a valid claim and all the things that occur in a bankruptcy case.
So is the answer to my question no, that the law would not change any time she changed domiciles?
In a bankruptcy case, her domicile, her proper domicile in a bankruptcy case gives the General Assembly or whatever the legislative branch is the authority to enact exemption statutes to opt out of the bankruptcy scheme and thereby determine what rights the debtor is going to have.
But the reason I ask the question is because if, under your interpretation, the law would change any time she changed domiciles, we might be creating an incentive for some people to move to debtor-friendly states before filing for bankruptcy, especially when we're talking about something as valuable as real property.
I would say the way you've posited the question is not the way that I would conceptualize this. It's not that the law changes. It's not that the law in the state of Florida or the state of Illinois changes with respect to how that state in a state court suit might adjudicate interests and property. The law doesn't change. The federal bankruptcy law does not change. The bankruptcy law says if you want to opt out, Illinois, you can opt out and you can determine what exemptions you're going to give and what protection this person's going to have in bankruptcy. The federal government has made this choice of law decision in the code and said each individual state, if they want to, has the right to make these determinations. And if you, Ms. Detter, are properly domiciled in the state of Illinois, then you get the benefit, the protection of Illinois law on this subject. If you're properly domiciled in South Carolina or wherever you're properly domiciled, you get the protection of their law. And every person then who's domiciled in this state or every person domiciled in another state gets the same exemptions. And they don't get to reach out and decide that they're going to claim an exemption in the state of Florida for real estate they have there and an exemption in the state of Arizona for real estate they have there or wherever. And, you know, although it may seem that this is an unlikely scenario, you know, you and I read every day about people now who are losing their homes because they got a subprime mortgage and no one asked them for proof of their income. And there's no way on earth they could afford to pay that mortgage. Well, what if they did that in more than one state and came to the bankruptcy court and said, gee, you know, South Carolina gives me this exemption because it's held in the tenancy by the entirety, and so does Arizona. I get to keep all my houses. I get to keep all my houses under the interpretation that the debtor gives to this statute rather than the deference Congress wanted to give to each individual state to make those determinations. And by contrast, what is the solution offered by the debtor? The solution is the statute doesn't refer to the law of the domicile at all. It refers to the law of wherever this property is located and whatever appears to be a result-oriented benefit to this individual. If it's real estate, normally we give the law of the situs control over what's going to happen here.
You're in your rebuttal time, you know.
Thank you for reminding me. I'll keep it. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Stephen Tobin. I'm here on behalf of Ms. Holland, who is the debtor in the bankruptcy case. Mr. Petty, who is at counsel's table with me, represented Ms. Petty in the bankruptcy court and in the district court. I asked to participate in this appeal because I did represent Mr. Jaffoon in the other case, and Judge Squire's opinion was taken up to Judge Guzman. Judge Guzman, by coincidence, also got the Holland case. When the Jaffoon case settled, this issue is a fairly important issue. It's becoming more and more important the more we see the subprime mess in this country develop. And I think that the issue that's before you now, there is a split between the bankruptcy court and Judge Squire's opinion and Jaffoon and Judge Guzman's opinion. You know, there's not a lot of clarity or precision that I can add to what Judge Guzman said. I think he got it right. I think it's a straightforward statutory construction matter. The language in subsection A of 522b2 is not the same as the language in subsection B. Subsection A requires the use of a domicile. Subsection B says any interest in any tenancy by the entirety property. Any meaning any, wherever it is located. It is a straightforward application of complex jurisprudence to require the law of the situs of the property to control the nature of the interests and the debtor's rights in the property. There are two issues, however, that Judge Guzman did not address and that were addressed in the briefs. And that is, first, this concept that there is a federal interest in which state law applies to exemptions. While counsel said it repeatedly in its briefs, he didn't identify what that federal interest is. I've been unable to ascertain what the federal interest is as to what state should apply. It seems to me that Congress, if they wanted the domicile to apply to tenancy by the entirety of property, could have used that language in subsection B if they wanted to do it. They didn't do that. Second, if uniformity is what was desired, Congress could have made 522D, the federal exemptions, applicable in all bankruptcy cases and not allowed for opt-out. That would have provided uniformity. They chose not to do that. So it seems to me that there is no federal interest in determining what state law controls this issue. It seems to me that under the Butner case, the Supreme Court case that we cited, the happenstance of a bankruptcy should not provide a windfall to either the debtor or creditors. If the creditors were unable to reach this Florida property before the bankruptcy, they should not be able to reach the property in the bankruptcy. In this case, as your honors are probably aware, there were no joint creditors. That's why the trustee did not sell the property and divide the proceeds. There were only creditors that had claims against Mrs. Holland and not against the husband and the wife together. That's why the property was not sold. The other issue that Judge Guzman did not address but has been addressed in the briefs is this idea that Illinois somehow opted out of 522-2B2. We don't think that Illinois did that. We don't think it's possible for Illinois to do that. If Illinois chose to pass a state law that conflicted with 522-2B2, it would be violative of the bankruptcy code and void under the supremacy clause. 522D, the federal exemptions, which you can opt out of, is very, very limited to its expression. It does not include tenancy by the entirety property. So there is no opt-out at all. And as a matter of fact, Illinois law on judgments, enforcement of judgments, is very, very clear. We cited that on page 27 of our brief. The statute specifically provides, and Illinois recognizes, the property that is held by tenancy by the entirety. And again, it's not just Illinois property. It is any property anywhere in the country. Illinois process obviously cannot be used to attach or to seize or have that property sold if it is for the benefit of only a single creditor or a non-joint creditor of the debtors. So therefore, Illinois law seems to be consistent with Florida law, and there's no reason why federal law would not require the application of the law of the situs of the property, which is Florida law. I'd be happy to answer any questions that your honors may have.
Is there any indication why the difference in the language between, as you point out, domicile in one hand and any...
Yes, your honor. I think in the court's opinion in Hunter, the Seventh Circuit's opinion in Hunter, you talked about what the effect is in the application of the law, and it's meant to be cumulative. A and B are meant to be cumulative, and because exemption statutes are designed or to be construed liberally in favor of the debtor, it comports with that policy as well. I don't know that there is a specific intention to make it possible for debtors to claim exemptions in more than one state. I don't think that was the reason, but it may very well be, like in Florida and Michigan as well, where the Jafoon case took place. In that situation, you don't need to have homestead property be tenancy by the entirety property. Illinois is different in that respect. Florida and Michigan, and I think Indiana as well, it does not have to be homestead property. So the idea is to accumulate the exemptions. And given the fact that Congress has, I think, cut back significantly on debtor protections under the 2005 legislation, I think this is one of the few things that Congress has left in place. And they had a chance to change that, of course, in 2005. They did not. By the way, Judge Guzman, in his opinion, referred to the new statute. We call it BAPSIPCA, Bankruptcy Abuse and Prevention. That statute does not apply. The 2005 amendments do not apply because this case was filed on October 15th of 2005. That statute only applies to cases filed on October 17th and thereafter.
If it did apply, would it have any effect?
No, it would not.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time? You have 2 minutes.
Well, I think that the federal interest in bankruptcy cases is quite obvious, contained in the Constitution. And the federal government has decided either you're going to take our list of exemptions or we're going to give to the states the discretion to enact statutes that apply. And it seems to us that if you adopt the appellee's position in this situation, that it completely negates the significance of a domicile. Someone can file a bankruptcy, I mean, wherever they want, and claim exemptions wherever they want, and accumulate all these exemptions, and undermine the whole idea of this scheme, which is to give people a fresh start in bankruptcy. You know, this statute doesn't say with respect to real estate, the law of the situs controls. I mean, counsel is suggesting that they could have inserted different language in here. Well, certainly they could have done that if they had wanted to. They could have said a state's choice of law rules will apply in the analysis, and they didn't do that. And yet we're going to go through all these gyrations because of this effort to construe these three words in such a way that for real estate, maybe it's the situs, or maybe it's the law of the domicile, but we're going to apply choice of law rules. Maybe it's federal choice of law rules. Maybe it's a different choice of law for personal property. We have to go through all these contortions to get to this result. And I don't see anywhere in this statute that it says that.
Of course, Congress could have made it easier if they'd used the same in both.
Should I say no comment? And I think, too, I would like to call your attention to the Drentl and the Errol cases that say choice of law rules are not incorporated into this statute. Bankruptcy is different. Thank you.
Thank you. The court will take notice of your hat as well. Thanks.